Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook, and at highlandradio.com.
Okay, you are very welcome back to the second hour of the 9 till noon show this Monday morning. I hope we do find you very well indeed. Greg, why are we criticising Putin? Look at our own government. As we know, Europe wants everything in Russia, and it's only part of Ukraine that the war is in. Why listening to lies on media, TV? Well, I actually get most of my, if the truth be told, I track most of those events in Ukraine and Russia via Telegram. Some people who tweet on behalf of, not tweet, but send telegrams out on behalf of Russia, others on behalf of Ukraine. I don't switch on BBC News to get an assessment as to what's happening over there. I source my own information, and I was tracking everything that was happening over the weekend, you know, half an hour before it was even mentioned in the mainstream media, so to speak. Greg, please remind anyone travelling abroad to check their passports. Neither the passport office or Ryanair notify you that is out of date. And by the time you put this information in for your boarding pass, it's far too late. Also, the lottery of spending hours online, the passport urgent slot, is not only tediously unnecessary, but highly frustrating. And beware of conflicting information from passport office staff over the phone, as this will add further to your frustration. If you can go to the passport office in person and go to passport query, sadly, it was too late for me to learn all of this. I missed a fantastic family wedding, so please avoid disappointment. Check your passport. I've wrote to Ryanair and Micheál Martin about this matter. A lapsed passport should be notified, just like driving licenses are, and when booking flights, you should have to enter, along with your passport number, your passport expiry date. Now, I get exactly where you're coming from. The couple of problems there is a lot of people might not necessarily have their new passport in their hand by the time they're booking their flights. And also, I don't think we're ever going to get to a point, though we should, that the likes of Ryanair, and there's thousands of airlines, that they're going to notify you of your passport. I think it's one of those that you're sort of expected to be able to check yourself, because the rules on your passport and when it expires are different in loads of different countries. But anyway, the listener says, when booking flights, you should have to enter your passport you should have to enter your passport number and your passport expiry date to remind you when it's due. This would be good practice. Also, the frustrating urgent passport slot system should be made a first-come, first-served queuing one and not the maddening lottery that it presently is. Well, I'm really sorry that you lost out on that family wedding. It sounds very disappointing. My father, says this listener, died on a Monday, and as he had a fortnightly check from the county council where he had worked, he had got his pension the week before, and as he had died at the beginning of 1 week, we got a letter from the county council looking for one of these week's pensions back, and that was about a week after he died. Indeed, I think now it was similar with someone in my family. They weren't an employee of the council, but they did very quickly look for any overpayment of pension after the date of their death back. The only way the public can get RTE back is not pay the TV licence. It's the only weapon we have because it's going to be brushed under the carpet. But whilst that might be, your non-paying of the TV licence wouldn't, and you could face sanction. In Ireland today, if something is legal, it doesn't have to be morally right. This legal seems to be a licence to do anything in any way. It's even a licence to kill, as far as innocent without a voice are concerned. Strange laws, strange society. Morning, Greg. So sick of the corruption in our country. I struggle to pay a TV licence every year. And why should I pay it when it's used to pay people over 500,000 euro in wages? The Irish people just sit back and take it. We need more men, women. Oh, I've read that one like Paddy Diver. Okay. Now, as I was saying before, 10, I think in terms of the news output, this might not be a popular point of view. The good work of the news teams that comes out from time to time, the investigative stuff, the sport and stuff, you know, the public service element of RTE Radio 1 and RTE TV 1, I think, you know, there is an argument for them to be sustained by some sort of a licence fee. But RTE 2, or much of RTE 2, if you mix it with some of RTE, is just shows you can watch on free satellite TV anyway, if you look what's going on during the day. As I said earlier on, likes of Lyric FM, fine, that's funded by the licensed payer, and this is no criticism of the people working there, but that could be a commercial entity. It could be just a standalone radio station. 2FM, as I say, you know, they have access to huge pools of fund to sort of promote breakfast shows or whatever it might be, you know, they're operating in the same space as Today FM, as iRadio and all the other commercial radio stations. I don't see justification for the license fee funding 2FM like it does. I don't really think the license fee needs to fund that whole swathe of digital channels that are there. I think they should be either, you know, they should just have to compete commercially with every other radio station. You know, now, as I say, there is probably a stronger argument for the retention of RTE Radio 1 and RTE 1, the TV channel. But anyway, as I say, this is a discussion. That's just not necessarily my view. It's my view off the top of my head, but it's just to get a conversation going because, you know, there is a conversation here about the future of the state broadcaster. That's just a fact. Now, one-of-a-kind culinary experience on the Wild Atlantic Way will take place this coming Saturday, the 1st of July. It's between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. in the Corcregan Mill Dunfanaghy. Taste Donegal Wild Atlantic flavours like never before. It's a new collaboration between three talented female entrepreneurs from Donegal who are passionate about the art of food production. Marion O'Donnell, here we go again. Sian. Every time.
Right.
I know it's one of two and I go for the wrong one every bloody time. And Cindy Adamek from Coco Millis. Is that correct?
Millish.
Millish, okay. That's milk, is it? Millish?
Sweet.
Sweet? Oh, no. Okay. This has started really well, hasn't it? Anyway, let's... Sian and Cindy, good morning to you, both of you. Thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks for having us.
Right, okay. So tell us how you began working together or what's the... do you want to go first, Cindy? How did this all come about?
Well, we met in Philadelphia. We went there with a...
Donegal Leo.
Yeah, took us to do a marketing, food marketing course. And that's where we met. And we started talking on the bus, going to different places. We started to talk about workshops and how could we, you know, share our knowledge. And that's how it happened.
And talk to me about Coco Millish. What is that?
Well, Coco Millish is a bean-to-bar chocolate. We make chocolate from scratch. It's the way chocolate's meant to be. And we use natural ingredients, sustainable packaging, compostable, which is important to us.
How different does your product taste from, you know, what people who have only consumed Cadbury's or something chocolate taste like?
Well,
is it a different experience and how is it different?
It's absolutely a different experience and that's how I started. I went to Mexico when I was 15 years old, yeah. Visited a cocoa farm and tasted what chocolate really is, and it's something completely different to what we're used to, the mass produced and, you know, using vegetable oils and stuff like that that shouldn't be there. Mm. And it's completely different. It tastes like the cacao beans is the way it should be.
Yeah. Sian, can you tell the difference between...
Oh, yes. The chocolate's absolutely beautiful. I'm a big fan. And my husband isn't really a chocolate fan.
But he likes cocoa
milk. He steals it and hides it. So, yeah.
Well, I have some here for you to try and tell
okay,
me.
Okay, right. When? And Sian, talk to me about your role in this and your company.
Well, I own Wild Fuchsia Bakehouse and we had a bakery in Dunfanaghy, but we were closed for 15 months out of 18 over lockdown and COVID. So we had started making bread mixes and we had won 3 awards. So what we did was we closed the bakery and we concentrated on our bread mixes. So we have a scone mix, soda, stout and wheaten, and we're working on a new one now, a potato bread mix.
So this allows people to create these breads in their own home. You do the hard work effectively, is that right?
Yeah, that's it. Well, when I did a little bit of research about why people don't bake, because I just love baking, it's my happy place. So apparently people don't like the mess and the fuss, and then they buy in all this flour and things and then they end up a year later throwing it out.
Yeah, I would say everyone listening to this programme has at least 1.5 bags of flour in the cupboard.
Yeah. Well, these are...
And probably the other half of bags on the floor of the cupboard.
So these are single use and they're very easy to use. And we also supply a lot of different ideas. So if you don't... I like to use buttermilk when I'm baking bread. But if you don't have buttermilk, then you can use a plant-based alternative. Mm. You can use ordinary milk.
But that being said, if you're accumulating all the other ingredients, it's really easy. It's not too difficult to pick up buttermilk now as well for the perfect experience.
Yeah, well, exactly. But it's just if you have it in the cupboard and then somebody calls unexpectedly, you can always.
It's not cheating, Sian, is it? No.
No, not when
I don't think it is. No, I think it's working smarter, not harder.
Exactly.
Isn't that it? Yeah.
All we do is weigh out the ingredients for you and give you the recipe. That's
brilliant.
It.
And where do you market your stuff? Well, not market, you're marketing it now, I suppose. But where is it available for people to buy? Do you stock? Does anyone stock it, or do you sell it direct to customer?
No, we're in local shops. So we're in local Dunfanaghy shops. We're in the counter. We're in the Super Value. We did the Food Academy, so we're in a lot of the Donegal Super Values and. We're in a lot of shops around Donegal, and we're in a few in the north, and we're also on Amazon as well, so that was exciting.
Yeah. And do you find, because some of it kind of be seen as some of the, probably if not all, traditionally Irish, do you sort of get a lot of people that feel that that's a taste of Ireland that can boast to their friends about, say, look what I got from Ireland, this is exactly how it tastes there, sell the dream?
Yeah, that's it, exactly. So we're also in places like Glenveagh and the Workhouse in Dunfanaghy, and they sell very well there. And we ship to hamper companies, so they ship to the States. So that's it exactly. It's a little taste of
your
home.
Tato, your Kerrygold, and your
love to get to Australia. That would be the next.
Yeah, that seems where half the country is now, so it makes sense. Marianne O'Donnell, talk to me about her business because she's not here, obviously.
Yeah, Marianne makes kombucha, which is lovely, and it's
fermented tea.
Yeah, fermented tea, and it's very good for your gut health, but it also tastes fantastic. So, Marianne's going to be using some. I make jams as well, just to go in my hampers that I sell online, and Marianne's going to be using some of my jam in her kombucha.
Brilliant.
And we're trying to use each other's products in as part of the class.
It's a harmony of entrepreneurs. It's a harmony of women in business. It's a harmony of flavors.
So it kind of
really works well together. I should ask, before we talk about the actual event and what people can experience, Cindy, your Coco Millish, is it, do you sell direct to consumer, or is it in shops?
I have it in the counter deli. And Harbour Road and Bumbeg and the Grazing Goat and Monaghan, and there's a few other shops that are coming on board.
Right. We're doing amazing things, aren't we, really? And, you know, individuals in little pockets of the world, aren't we? And do you source your beans, your cocoa beans? It is a bean, isn't it? You source them from
Nicaragua.
Nicaragua.
From organic farms.
Yeah.
And I contact the farmers, personally.
You don't have a sort of an asterisk saying, I'm doing something to support sustainable farming. You're actually dealing with them directly and making sure that they get good deals.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's important to have an ethos in a business, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, okay. Right, okay. So, talk to me about the workshop then. How is this all going to work?
So, we're each going to teach the participants some of our skills. So this first class, I'm going to be teaching people how to make scones and some tips and tricks of things to avoid when you're making scones. And we're also going to make raspberry jam.
Where's this chocolate?
No, I haven't.
You can't wait.
Come on,
I'm hiding it.
Say something's there and not... I'm going to just taste this because there's a lot here. Is this for all...
Everybody to try, yeah.
Sorry, Sian.
No, you're okay.
You know what you have to do. You keep talking till I stop chewing.
Okay. So the plan is that we're going to do more
packaging
courses.
Packaging is lovely.
It is. It's beautiful, isn't it? So we're going to do more courses. So we'll cover things like making chutneys and jellies. We'll do cake baking. And maybe Christmas I'll do mince pies and cranberry jelly. So we've got lots of plans. So I'm kind of doing the chutney jam side and the baking side. And then...
I'll be making truffles using different ingredients like Irish whiskey. I'll be using Sian's jams to make the white chocolate ones. And I'll be using caramel sauce from Love a Little sauces, and so just to combine Donegal products.
Yeah, and
keep going, Sian.
Marianne will be using some of the jam in her kombucha, and I'm actually really looking forward to learning how to make kombucha because it's gorgeous.
Lots of plans. Come here, we'll come back to that in a second. Let's talk about this chocolate. I'll show the packaging for those of people who are watching. It's beautifully done. It's obviously chocolate because I didn't know what it was going to taste like, right? But it is chocolate.
Did you taste the beans?
But it's delicious. Like, it's so full of flavour, but it doesn't feel like it's full of salt, not salt, but sugar and stuff.
No.
And the aftertaste is Absolutely gorgeous.
Isn't it just?
Just sits there. Wow, lovely. Would you cook with that?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Is that appropriate to cook with? Yeah. I wasn't listening to anything you said. So, Cindy, you said things.
I said I'm going to make truffles.
Lovely. And Sian, you just kept talking for me, didn't you?
Yeah,
so I
yeah.
ate chocolate.
Yeah, no, I'm making scones.
And do we know what Marianne's going to be doing as part of the first experience?
Yeah, she's going to show us how to make kombucha, but also get...
Kombucha's fascinating. Fermented tea. I'm trying to imagine what that might be, but anyway.
Yeah, so she's going to allow people to make their own flavours. So she'll come with a variety of ingredients and then people can make their own kombucha. Wow. And then they'll get...
She left a few bottles here as well.
Okay,
yeah,
brilliant.
To try.
Okay.
And then people will get to take home a wee jar of jam and...
What kind of people do you think might turn up?
Foodies.
Yeah, people that want to sort of explore flavour.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I wanted to take away the myth about the baking's hard because it's not. Mm. You just need to know a few wee tips and tricks that will help you get
it right. And listen, I think anyone who cooks, you do it for yourself, of course, but you do it for feedback. So if you make your bread or your scones and someone goes, oh, that's delicious.
Yeah.
It sort of encourages you, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely.
And it's going to be hands-on, so it's not something that they're going to be watching, so they can participate.
And what was going to ask then, in terms of the three of you will be there, people turn up, as you say, you get people involved. Just on the flavour of that chocolate is... Already, I imagine, it's a little bit like coffee, isn't it? It's a little bit like wine, but less harmful for you than perhaps than wine in that, you know, you can become a bit of an aficionado of it and, you know, you could probably have a stab at where a bean came from, couldn't you?
Sorry?
You could have a stab at where a particular bean came from.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
So
it's
I tried different beans from different parts of the world and they all taste different, they smell different and... That one was the one that I absolutely loved because it has notes of cinnamon and berries.
But what's different about that is there's different tastes as you're eating it. You know, so say you have you have a regular say a Cadbury's chocolate milk or something, right? You bite into it and that's what it is. But that, as you're chewing it, it's almost coffee-ish, and then there's chocolate, and then but then it just leaves this nice taste on your palate afterwards.
And the difference with the
and I can still feel the coffee. the one sugar in my coffee, but I can still taste that. Do you know how sometimes you have sweets and the go ahead.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing, and that you should experience with chocolate and the mass-produced one. Mm. All you feel is sugar because it's just loaded with sugar
and then they tell you
vegetable oils.
They pour milk into it, and that makes you feel good about the sugar.
Yes,
so that's how it
works,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we use coconut sugar, which is a lot better for you than refined sugar, and doesn't spike the blood sugars. The sugars in blood, and it tastes lovely.
Okay, so you're making truffles. It's going to be lovely. I like the whole idea of the jams and the chutneys as well, if people want to get a little bit more sort of into it. So how do people, I mentioned where they are, aren't they? Cork, Regan Mill, Dunfanaghy, Saturday between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. A nice little thing for someone to do for themselves on a Saturday.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people give over the weekends when they've worked hard all week to other people. And I think sometimes we need to make a little bit of space for something we'd enjoy, to go and chill out for the few hours on a Saturday afternoon for yourself.
Exactly. And we're going to supply a nice lunch as well. And of course, when we're making the scones, we'll have to eat them. So we'll have lots of nice treats as well. Mm. And people can book on Eventbrite.
Yeah.
We've put the tickets there. So
lovely.
We've
and what do they search? We'll link it here. But what do they search for on Eventbrite? Or where is the link?
Donegal Wild Atlantic Flavours, and we're also on Instagram and Facebook, and you can book from there as well. So
okay, super
really
stuff.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, and you work well together. I think you all complement each other as well.
Yeah, nice. We all got on so well when we were in Philadelphia, and that was a fantastic experience. So
good.
It's nice to bring it all back to Donegal.
And do you feel you've been supported in your endeavours? I know you were taken out to Philadelphia with Leo, and I hear great things about that.
Mm-hmm.
But is there a sense now we're better at supporting entrepreneurship and people with ideas like yours that you can say, you know, I can actually do this here. I can create this product that could sit on any shelf anywhere in the world. Like, do you get a sense that there's more support for what you're doing now?
Yes, lovely. Certainly. Absolutely. Between Leo and Udras, they've been very, very good to us.
And we have the Donegal Food Coast, which is a great initiative, and people can log on, have a look at all the different restaurants.
I'm looking at that bag, Sian. What's in the bag? Can you just hand me the bag?
Is that
for us? Okay.
Scones and jam.
Oh, is the butter?
No,
I'll bring my own butter.
It'll not be.
It's not your fault. It's not scones or jam that will kill me. It's the butter.
Nice salty butter. We had a whole conversation.
Well,
unfortunately,
I can share the chocolate, but they're coming with me.
that's mine. Yours.
Yeah. Listen, I hope you. I think it's going to be lovely. I think you love working together, and I think it's going to be lovely for anyone who attends. Go to. What's the Facebook called?
It's Donegal Wild Atlantic Flavours.
Right, Donegal Wild Atlantic Flavours, and you can book your slot. It's this coming Saturday. It's between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. in beautiful Dunfanaghy too. If you ever needed an excuse to go to Dunfanaghy at the weekend, why not make it so? Sian, it's been great having you in. Great to see you again. Cindy, thank you so much. I didn't know we had Coco Millish creating chocolate here in our little corner of the world, and it tastes absolutely fantastic. Where did you say you can get it again?
You can get it in the Counter Deli and Harbour Road in Bombeg and online.
Yeah, it is lovely. And your products, again, you mentioned the local places that are supplying them, and they're on Amazon as well.
Yeah, so we're in the counter as well, and the likes of McAuliffe's and Centra and Dunfanaghy, and we're in quite a few shops around the county.
So. Okay, hopefully exciting times ahead. Certainly going to be good fun next Saturday. Thanks both of you very much for
calling in, and
continued success. Okay, now those of you watching would have seen some behind the scenes action as we put in place, with full transparency, a rather modest trombola. Is that what they're called? We are joined in studio now by Isabel, Chair of Donegal Hospice. Hi, Isabel.
Hello, Greg. How are you? Thanks for having us.
It's great to have you in. And also, Breege Dolan, who's here for the glamour, really. Breege is not doing much speaking, are you, Breege? You're just here to bring a bit of glamour to the whole
thing.
Exactly. And to make sure you keep Isabel in check. Breege, of course, is a volunteer with Donegal Hospice and has been selling an awful lot of tickets, and we're going to be doing that draw now. Right, so talk to me how we've arrived at this point, Isabel.
Well, we had a wee patient in the hospice, and his name was John Sheridan, and he sent for me one evening, and he wanted to talk to me, and he said, I want to donate my Ford Pop Sit Up and Beg car to the hospice, which he did, and I got all the paperwork, I have it all here, and the keys, and he said to me at the time, he said, I want to give something back to the hospice. I could give a donation or I could do donations in lieu of flowers, but I want to give something back to them. And so we're here now, a year on, and the tickets sold very well for it. He thought at the time, if I got anything from 10 to 12,000, it would be very good. But he said that would be pushing it. So we're now sitting at 27,000, Greg.
I mean, there's something so incredibly amazing and incredibly sad happening here all at the same time, in that we are, and I feel genuinely honoured to be a part of, we are fulfilling John Sheridan's wishes here.
That's
beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
To be able to do that.
The wee cars outside there, I brought her up on Saturday when Paul McDevitt was on.
Right.
And I don't think Paul wanted to announce anything because he wants it for himself. But
did
anyway,
he buy a ticket?
He bought a ticket weeks ago. But anyway, she's outside, and just hope it goes to a good owner. And you know.
And John, it's a familiar story, isn't it? In that, now John was 81 years of age when he passed away, but he might not have been fully aware until such time as he went to avail of the hospice services. Precisely what it was.
Yeah.
He was moved by that.
He was. He came into us, and I think that's when he got his pain relief and all seen to, and he was just overwhelmed by the care and the care that his family got. So that's why he wanted to give something back.
Now, you talked about, as it turns out, John's rather modest expectations of 10 to 12, he thought. And did you give the figure, is the figure public as to what was raised?
Yeah, 27,000.
Wow. That's remarkable, isn't it? And Breege, I know you don't want to speak, but you know, this is the 9 till noon show, so deal with it. It wasn't hard to sell tickets for this, was it? Because it's such a unique type of thing, isn't it? And the message and the story with it as well.
So whenever people heard the story then, they didn't hesitate at all about buying tickets. Like, and everybody, they just loved the wee car. and once I seen the colour of it and everything and looked around it, they didn't hesitate at all to buy any tickets.
Yeah, and the story and the history and
the
documentation.
And the history of the whole thing and yeah. everything.
It was a car John was very fond of, yes. I take it.
Yeah. Isabel, he had a few cars. He had a few cars, but that was his favourite.
All right, lovely
so,
stuff.
So I hope it goes well now. And as I say, I'm getting very attached to the wee car. I might have to put on a wee bid on her. If whoever buys or gets her,
yeah.
if they're selling her, I'll have to chat to them.
Okay, right. Shall we do the draw then?
Yep.
Now, just as we were going on air, and as I say, it was on camera to some extent, we did give that a good rotation, but just to satisfy people, yeah.
Here, I'll help you here. On the van.
The hamster drum.
I wasn't going to say anything about it. Okay, right, so open it up and dig deep. Now everyone can see what's going on here. And we're going in deep. And someone is about to win this beautiful car. And out it comes. And the winner is...
Peter Brown.
Peter Brown. Here, give me that and I'll hold it up here. There's no private information on that.
No, nothing.
I'll cover the number. So there it is. That's... let me switch cameras here. Peter Brown, we have your mobile. I'm starting to take credit for this now. I've had nothing to do with it. But Peter Brown there is the winner. I've covered his number. And ticket 1242,
yep.
I'll give
Thank
that
you.
To you.
Thanks.
And Peter, congratulations. You have won this 1951. Now you say that, 51
1959.
Is 59. Well, 50s. I've got 51 written here. Anyway, be that as it may. This is a beautiful old vehicle that's been well cared for. It's a prized possession. It is the late John Sheridan's beloved 1959 Ford Popular car, and it's going to find a new home if we can rip it out of Isabel's hands.
All right. Right.
Come here. How encouraging is it to get this level of support for the work that you do? You know,
this is
really vital funding that goes to do amazing stuff, Isabel.
It is, Greg, and there's just an awful lot happening with hospice at the moment because we're running the J for June as well. And as I say, we had 121k for that last year, and it's going good this year as well. So, just waiting on a good few more jives in,
including Caroline's.
Caroline and yourself.
Yeah,
and,
I'm not jiving with Caroline though. She's got good ideas. No,
all right, okay.
Ideas.
And we're waiting on Daniel O'Donnell's doing his today. So,
is he?
Yeah, so we'll get his in this evening. So, no, every penny counts to us. It's all put to the good of the patient and for the care of the patient.
Delighted we get a chance to talk about that here.
That's
quite
good.
Regularly,
yeah.
isn't it? So people understand that. Breege, have you done your drive?
Not yet, no. Might do it tonight.
That's what we're all saying. There's going to be some jives. There's going to be some jives done today, isn't it? Everyone's promising to do something.
This is our final
today.
Week, so.
Yeah. It's actually good to get a good push of it.
Yeah.
Good push.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Now, just remind us about the drive for June then, because David James plays a song in his show inviting people to jive to it. Video it and send it in. You don't have to do it then. Do it whatever you like in the evening or whatever. It's about getting involved, having a bit of fun. It's not too late to get a sponsorship card, presumably,
nope.
is
no,
it?
So it's not.
Talk
no.
to me about how we do that or how
people
they
can
do that.
They can contact me on 087-238-9607
okay.
and I'll get the sponsor card to them. And like there was a wee 2-year-old on jiving last week, which was great because it's all age groups. But it's not even the jiving. If they want to do something else, because
exactly.
there's bake sales, there's everything, car washes, everything is happening.
It's just a big push this month to help support the work that the Donegal Hospice does, isn't it? Really, that's what it's
and
all
we'll
about.
And we'll leave everybody alone then for the rest of the
year. You say that.
Leave you alone, leave you alone, Greg, for
you
the rest
say
of the year.
That. You'll probably be back in July or August, but you're more than welcome anytime.
Thank
Isabel,
you.
Chair of the Donegal Hospice, well done. Breege Dolan, I think you did excellent as well in your role today. A volunteer with Donegal Hospice and has worked really hard in selling the tickets to this, which has helped to get this amazing figure. And just finally mention the gentleman's name again.
Peter Brown.
Peter Brown is the... I love this story. As I say, I'm feeling all different types of emotions. I think it's really sad because it's something... But I would be really proud to be able to look after, if it was me, to look after John's prized possession. I'd see a great deal of pride in that.
Yeah.
I think it would be a great gift.
Yeah.
As well as
and you know, we
nice.
Went to all the vintage shows.
Yeah.
And Breed had to go to some on her own because I wasn't available. But we just, you know, we just felt that John was doing it for us. He was doing good for us, you know, so... He was
Brilliant
there
stuff.
Anyway.
All right, okay, Isabel Breed.
Thank you.
Thank you
Can
both.
I just get a plug in there, Craig, on the 29th of July? Anybody wants to sponsor the I'm doing a parachute jump for Nada the Donegal Hospital.
You left that late, didn't you? She doesn't want to speak. She's quiet in the corner.
I just have to get there.
You know, no, no, you're like, oh, I'm not speaking. I'm shy and retiring. Oh, by the way, I'm doing a parachute jump at the end of July. Can you support me, please?
She's mad.
So where are you doing it out of February?
I'm doing the Irish Parachute Club down in Offaly.
Fantastic. Okay. So, and is it your first one?
I've done one 10 years ago for the Crumlin Hospital.
Brilliant. Okay, so this one is for?
This one's for the Donegal Hospice.
Donegal Hospice. Yeah. And how can people support you?
Sponsor carriage as well. They can contact myself or Isabel.
Lovely. All right,
and
well done.
Sponsor carriage out and about places.
Fantastic. So I will be speaking to you again before the end of July by the sounds of things. All right, thanks, Isabel. Good
Thank
luck
you.
With that.
Brief. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, we'll be back with more in the 9 till noon show after these.
Thanks.
All right, when Archie first released the statement pointing to undisclosed pay to Ryan Tubridy, it was clear it was going to be big. To be honest with you, as I said earlier in the show, I didn't think it was going to be quite this significant. And we've had the story emerge this morning that Dee Forbes, who would have been a very interesting person to speak to in relation to this, has now resigned. And as far as I understand, there's no obligation to appear before any committees to answer questions. But as I say, we'll speak to people with more knowledge about that in a moment. We're going to be joined very shortly by the former editor-in-chief of News Talk, Garrett Hart, a Donegal man, of course. But first to finance spokesperson with Sinn Féin, another Donegal man, of course, Deputy Piers Doherty. Gentlemen, good morning to you. And Piers, I might start with you. Why is this, in your view, so significant?
Well, it's significant, Greg, because RTE, we have to remember, are mainly funded by the public purse, and there are people all over our county that go into the post office and get stamps to be able to pay the RTE licence at the end of the year when it's up for renewal. And, you know, that's all the more challenging at a time of pressure and inflation and a cost of living crisis. And RTE, you know, have made a virtue of the fact that they have disclosed the pay of the top 10 broadcasters in RTE. But now, over the last number of days, in a drip fashion, we have found out that RTE have misled us all, that RTE have provided inaccurate accounts and have repeatedly told the Oireachtas and indeed the public who fund them that the wages that were paid to their highest presenter, that being Ryan Tubridy, was underdisclosed, that they had another channel to pay Ryan Tubridy. And it appears from what we read in the media over the weekend that there was attempts made, and successful attempts, to actually, when they were paying this invoice, an invoice of, I think, €230,000, that, you know, the presenter's name wouldn't be on it. And there are serious, serious questions for RTE, you know, in relation to all of this. Why, first of all, did they continue to put into the public domain that his salary was less than it was, when we now know that there was undisclosed payments of €345,000 to him? Why did they ask the agency in Britain to book it in as consultancy fees when the payment of in last year of $150,000 was to be made to him, which cost RTE $230,000? Why did they stipulate that no name should be on that? Why? Who else in RTE knew about this? We hear from the statement today from Dee Forbes that this was discussed with other senior individuals and across the RTE. Who else knew about this? How and under God did they come up with this kind of convoluted system where they say that, oh, well, you know, he was supposed to get €75,000 from a third party, we believe is Reynolds, for appearances. And if Reynolds didn't pay that RTE guaranteed it. But in a way, RTE, Reynolds weren't losing any money anyway, because RTE seem to have been providing free advertising for them.
They give them a credit note for the amount that could be spent against advertising. So it came out out. Yeah, okay. So, like, sorry to fast forward this, Piers, but look, we're going to have committee meetings. Who will be there? Who won't be there? We don't know. Fingers will be pointed all over the place. And the Irish public feel now, once again, that this will, all the dust will settle. Those who may be held responsible will ride off into the sunset. Nothing actually will change. There'll be a brief sabbatical. Ryan Tubridy's back on the radio. And it's another situation, not as serious as maybe some of the problems that we've had in the HSC, where we might find out that the way we do things in this country is terrible, but ultimately nothing will change. The bills for the licence fee will still keep coming in, and people will still continue to earn an absolute fortune off the back of the taxpayer. Like, what could come of this once all the dust settles? Nothing.
Well, look, Greg, it could transpire that way, and you know, people would be forgiven for thinking that that's possibly what could happen, because we've been here before and we haven't seen individual accountability. But there has to be individual accountability. Dee Forbes has resigned, but she was leaving anyway in a couple of weeks' time. She was on annual leave now, and then she was finished in her position. But she has been forced to resign. Like, that's, you know, that's a reality. The question now is, who else was involved in this? And where is the individual accountability in relation to them? Is there any other pay issues within RDE? Like, this is taxpayers' money we're talking about. This is misleading the Public Accounts Committee, who have a duty and responsibility under our constitution to look at the expenditure of taxpayers' money. This is in no way a minor issue. And the what RTE released yesterday in response to questions was absolutely shameful. Where they're refusing to put public information or information that the public need into the public domain. And if they come before the committee on Wednesday and on Thursday, because there's two separate committees, with that type of approach, they are going to do serious damage to RTE and to public confidence within RTE. So, you know, I think the message is going out loud and clear from across the political divide that that is not acceptable. We do not want any more drip-drip information. We want to know the full facts, warts and all. And yes, there has to be individual accountability as a result of this here. If somebody in RTE, and this is where we're waiting for the questions to be answered, if somebody or some persons in RTE devised a scheme that prevented from the public to know that there was significant additional payments. Now, we're talking about €345,000 over a period of years. Some of these payments were €75,000 per year. Like, there's people listening to your show, Greg, that wouldn't make that money in a couple of years, never mind a top up to their already very generous salary. This is not acceptable.
Well, just finally, do you think this should trigger a review of RTE and what is funded? I said earlier on, you know, maybe you could make an argument for RTE Radio 1, maybe you could make an argument for one of the TV channels, but the licence payer now is paying tons of money to support, like, 2FM, the digital output, stuff that is broadly available. You know, we don't need that to be funded by the taxpayer. There's competitors out there in the independent sector. Do you think now is the time for we have an overall review of what we're funding and how we're funding it? Maybe now is the time for that. Why should RTE be able to dip into a cash pot to put €10,000 up for a competition to launch a new show, while Today FM have to probably, you know, have the begging bowl out to a commercial partner to try and come up with a fifth of that? You know, and let's level the playing field now then.
Look, there is a broader conversation, and that conversation has started, Greg, in relation to, you know, public services and broadcast. And in fairness to RTE and their coverage of this issue, because a lot of people in RTE are not on the Ryan Tuberty scales of money. They're not at all. They're average workers. They're working in the news desks, and the researchers and so on and so forth. And they are absolutely also disgusted in relation to what has happened. But there's a wider conversation in relation to what is public service broadcasting. Yourselves in Highland Radio, for example, talk to people in Donegal. Where are they getting their news content from? Mostly they're getting it from Highland Radio. Yes, they get it from RTE as well. So there has to be a broader conversation in relation to how do we fund news and public broadcasting. There is no doubt about this, but Greg, Dee Forbes was coming before our committees in the Oireachtas year after year saying, we are broke, we need more money, we need to up the fee, we need to look at how we're going to collect this fee. It wasn't long ago, people were being sent to prison because they didn't pay the fee. And as those conversations were happening, saying we need to up the fee, we need to get revenue to collect the fee so nobody can go without paying it, there was undisclosed payments being made to the top presenter in RTE. It is absolutely sickening for ordinary people, for ordinary staff, for the public to find out that this is happening. And I don't see this as a minor issue at all. I see this, it goes to the heart and a big test in terms of, will there be accountability and will we get the facts? Now, there's an external review going to be commissioned by the government. The idea that that's going to take 7 months just isn't acceptable in my view. But that should not be used as a way to to actually not put the information in. Okay. I expect this week, by Thursday when the PAC is finished, that we should have no further questions to answer. And Dee Forbes, in her statement, said that, you know, she's concerned about RTE, the future of RTE, the public and all the rest.
Okay.
The best thing Dee Forbes can do is actually come before those two committees. The fact that she has resigned should not be a way of getting out to holding herself to account before those committees this week.
Deputy Piers Doherty, thank you for your time this morning. As I mentioned, Garrett Hart, former editor-in-chief at News Talk, joins us now. Your reaction, I suppose, Garrett, as a media person, to what's unfolded over the last 4 or 5 days?
Morning, Greg. Well, I think the first thing is that the RTE management and the RTE board have forgotten that they are run using taxpayers' money. And they forgot that as a principal, which has brought them into this position. I pick up on what Piers said in terms of the external review, but I would move it on, Greg, in saying that there's going to be root and branch reform of RTE like they've never seen before on the back of this. The politicians are clearly annoyed. I think the general public are irate that these types of deals are going through. And what RTE's challenge has been over the last number of years is to fund public service broadcasting with a model that is broke. So the RTE model is broke. The new director general had one, line on his agenda coming in was to convince the politicians that they should increase the license fee to fund public service broadcasting. That's gone. That's dead in the water. So the outcome is going to be that for the next probably 3 to 5 years, there's going to be an accounting exercise done on RTE to slim back the operation, which will unfortunately result in job losses, will unfortunately result in a slimmed down RTE, and the days of the 200,000, 300,000, 400,000 contracts are over.
You mean to tell me that people will no longer be able to command that money, the likes of the Ryan Tubridys and Joe Duffy's and so on?
Absolutely. Like you can't, the sums don't add up, Greg. If you don't have a license fee that can fund this organization, and for the last 10 years, RTE have been running a deficit, which means that we've been topping up on top of the license fee. So that model is broken. So that model needs to change because we do need RTE to be a strong public sector broadcaster. But what it's going to result is in a slimmed back operation and one that has contractors like presenters on significantly reduced contracts. Now that they may move to the commercial sector, and the commercial sector may start to cherry pick. So that could be another challenge for RTE. But to that point,
Garrett, one of the big arguments was that they had to pay people the big money because, you know, that's how you would retain the talent because they were in such demand. Could a Ryan Tubridy or a Ray Darcy command 200,000 or 300,000 euro per year at News Talk?
I think that ship has sailed maybe a few years ago. But now, if I was at News Talk, I'd be sitting back. I'd be watching this closely. And I'd wait for 6 months because within 6 months, lots of contracts that are up for renewal won't be renewed at the same level. A lot of contracts will be under so much scrutiny from the Public Accounts Committee, Media Committee, and RTE will be handcuffed into saying we should be paying these maybe in line with public sector rates because it's a public sector organisation. Yeah. It's not a commercial organisation.
What do you think of Ryan Tubridy's future, if you don't mind me asking? Because, you know, we're talking about the public reaction. There's obviously an internal situation here in that, you know, there are people who took pay cuts working on his show or on that are paid really quite modest amounts of money. And of course, now, you know, in terms of his approach and his presenting style, you don't want to be called out every time you say something by saying, oh, well, that's easy for you to say, blah, 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 blah. So someone who, as I say, a media person, where do you see his future in Irish media or within RTE?
I think it's quite difficult at the moment. I think his big mistake was to issue that first statement within minutes where he said, okay, I don't know anything about this. I can't shed any more light on this. You know, 70-80 grand goes into your bank account every year, and you know, you're not aware of that. And then he had to come out 24 hours later and clarify that. Poor judgment, whoever advised him. And I think his future in RTE is very difficult. I think they will find it extremely difficult to put him back on air, because he will be bombarded, as you said, at every opportunity with why he got into this arrangement and why he wasn't upfront with it.
Yeah, okay. And very finally, do you think then, and without prompt, Piers Doherty referenced sort of the funding of other radio stations, and including Highland and all the other independent radio stations. I think that we might quite quickly see a move whereby this money is perhaps spread a little bit more fairly.
Well, that's, look, if I was giving any sort of advice to politicians, I would be saying the model of Highland Radio, the model of News Talk, is that these stations deliver public service broadcasting every day. The model is financially sound. The model is of the highest quality. And these stations around the country now need to be bolstered with license fee to ensure that your station and your team can be developed, and you can retain staff.